G'day, this is Mark Pesce, and welcome to This Week in Startups Australia. Across 12 years, This Week in Startups Australia has charted the growth of Australia's startup ecosystem and beyond, all the way across the Tasman to New Zealand. On our last episode, we looked at ZapMe, a startup working in one of the most highly regulated areas of the economy, telecommunications. But telecommunications is a huge field with lots of space for new startups. In this episode, we take a look at another one of them, solving the last mile problem for connected sensors out in the field, recorded live from the show floor at the 2025 Canterbury Tech Festival. That's coming right up on this episode of This Week in Startups Australia.
Well, Mark, my name is Donna Henderson, and I'm the Business Development Manager for River. River is a technology company that manufactures electronics. So we develop IoT gateways that connect sensors, machines, PLCs, anything that's out in the wild, to the customer's cloud using Starlink direct-to-cell. We can also actually connect to terrestrial cellular networks.
Okay. All right. So does this take the place of having a Starlink connection antenna? Is that built into this, or do you connect it to your Starlink?
That's a really good question. Starlink didn't rebrand the service. So we call it Starlink Direct to Cell. And Starlink use a cellular spectrum that they lease off a mobile network operator country by country. And it's a new V2 mini Starlink satellite. About 750 have been launched into orbit, and those satellites have the direct-to-cellular antenna, which we've developed our technology to use an LTE modem that connects using
So you don't need the Starlink terminal is what it's called. You don't need the Starlink terminal. You can just use this device and that's it.
Yes, and the Starlink terminal provides you with broadband, whereas ours is more IoT data. So
low bandwidth.
Low bandwidth with high latency.
For context, I think certainly in New Zealand and in Australia, this would often be things that are monitoring agricultural, right? Or mines.
Agriculture is definitely one of the verticals, utilities, environmental monitoring, oil and gas, mining, any industry that has high value assets that generally sit outside cellular, or high value assets that go in and out of cellular, or even assets that need a fallback to satellite when the grid fails.
Yeah, of course. All right, so does that mean, are these battery powered, or do they accept a battery? In other words, when you're putting them somewhere that's really remote, how do they run?
We generally connect to a solar panel with a battery backup as well. So it's a full IoT solution that we're just the part that does the connectivity piece. So generally there'll be a solar panel and a battery pack that will connect, power a sensor. Yep. And we tap into that power, or you can plug it into mains. So we've done a few pilots where we've monitored transformers and stuff on the grid, and there's always power close by.
Of course, because you're right there. Okay, all right. So are these on the market now?
No, they're not.
Are they close to market?
Yeah, they are. So the satellite network is in orbit.
Right.
Starlink have some key partners with their mobile network operators country by country. So in Australia, it's Telstra.
Yep.
New Zealand, it's 1NZ. Timo in the US and Rogers in Canada. We have been working with these partners to establish relationships and put our box through compliance. Our modem also needs to be tested as well. So we're nearly at the end of that process with T-Mobile. and T-Mobile are the first ones to go live with the LTE data.
So you go live in America first.
Yeah, we do.
Are there also then regulatory issues because these are telecommunications projects in four different regulatory domains? Do you have to worry about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of regulatory stuff that we need to worry about.
This is my own history because I used to make devices that connected to the telephone network, so I know way too much about that.
Oh my goodness. Don't even get me started. But our device needs certification, our modem needs certification, and then our SIM profile needs to be set by the mobile network operator in order to connect to the Starlink satellite. So it's really got nothing to do with Starlink. It's those key partnerships with the mobile network operators that are really important to us.
Yeah, okay. And has that taken a long time then?
Yes, it has taken a long time, Mark. It's taken a long time. There is a satellite network up there. It's ready to go. And yeah, the mobile network operators are rolling this out through their handsets first. So they're connecting people first, which makes sense. You can send a text message using a 1NZ SIM card using the Orbital network. But you can't send data until your device has been through compliance and your modem's been through compliance as well. So it's country by country, that seems to be, they roll out handsets first, IoT second.
Right. Okay. All right. Which, yeah. When we start seeing that, is that going to transform the way organizations that are installing remote sensing will be able to operate? Does that give them a lot more sort of capability?
Absolutely. Traditionally, you could connect to a geostationary satellite with a very expensive box, with a very expensive data plan. There's things like Iridium short burst data, which is sending, you know, you might be doing a read off your sensors every 15 minutes and sending it once a day. Direct to cell will give you 3G capability via satellite.
Yeah. So that's...
It's pretty good.
That's, yeah, exactly. It's pretty good. It's something where it's continuous monitoring. It's not periodic monitoring.
Absolutely. On that note, though, the satellites do pass over periodically. So there are broken connections. So the way that the River device works is it creates a virtual persistent connection through digital twinning on our server and on our device. So the business logic system doesn't know that it's an intermittent network. The sensor doesn't know it's an intermittent network.
Most systems don't like intermittent connections.
No, they don't. And traditional cellular does not like intermittent. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Okay. Did you design and manufacture the hardware?
Yes. Our first iteration was working with another satellite network called Swarm. That was a VHF network.
Is that the one in the UK that got shut down?
No, it was the one in America that got shut down.
Okay, sorry.
So, yeah, I know, there's so many. SpaceX purchased, probably 2.5-3 years ago, purchased the Swarm network. We were going to market with our first industrial IoT gateway, which was a Modbus over RS-485 wired device.
RS-485, that's not something you hear a lot anymore.
Yep, so it's an industrial gateway that connected, again, to, you know, industrial machines, PLCs. And as we were launching our product into the market, the network was purchased by Starlink, and then we got the news that they were deorbiting the network and replacing it with Starlink direct-to-cell. So we've actually had 2 years to develop and manufacture our new box. We're pretty excited. It can send and receive data more often. It can send more data. We were limited to 190 byte packets with the other network, so more of an Iridium short burst data.
191 packets of about 1,000 characters per packet.
24 packets a day, 195 bytes per packet. So classic IoT. Yeah, classic IoT. So we feel pretty lucky that we partner with SpaceX. The network's fantastic. The satellites are in orbit. there's this added layer of complexity because they didn't buy their own spectrum. They're leasing it from the mobile network operators. So we now have to have relationships with them. And so that's pretty much what my day is taken up with, is moving forward with those relationships and also connecting with customers who have real-world use cases.
Do you have investors?
Yeah, we do.
How do you keep them calm and copacetic through this long regulatory and sort of business-building process?
How do we keep them calm? We've actually just got amazing investors.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, amazing investors. And they can see how large the market is by vertical. At the moment, we are concentrating our efforts on regulatory compliance for oil and gas operators at the well pad. So upstream operators need to meet emission standards, methane mitigation, methane monitoring.
Oh my gosh, that's right, because that's huge, because they found out that almost all of the wells are leaking more methane than they thought,
yes.
Right? So, yeah.
But first you've got to measure it, and then you have to do the work to keep monitoring and obviously mitigate the methane that's leaking in the first place. So they need connectivity for that. So we're not sensing methane. We let the sensor manufacturers do that. We're just giving them the ability to connect rather than Bob driving out in his ute, you know, taking 8 hours, plugging, you know.
Well, and it's not continuous. That's the thing, right? You actually want something that can literally send up a flare when things are breaking.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, this is amazing. Thank you so much. Henderson acknowledged her amazing investors. She was pointing to one of the big secrets behind successful startups. Successful startups have investors who are rooting for them, who understand the business enough to be able to give it the space that it needs to succeed. I mean, we saw with MyoVolt, again, the investors had to be prepared for a regulatory process around a medical device. For River, it's going to be around regulating a telecommunications device. An investor at an early stage really is a special creature, because they're in a relationship. It is not just an investment. And that relationship is about nurturing and growing. And that requires all of the qualities of parenting. So you need to be patient, you need to be forthright, you need to be giving. And if you can do all of that and you can find investors with all of those qualities, then as a startup, you're on the first step to success. Thanks to Donna Henderson of River for joining us on this episode, and huge thanks to the folks at the Canterbury Tech Summit for giving me the space, the time, and the invitation to record great startups. We've got a decade of great stories from founders on our website at twistartupsaus.com. It's got everything. It's got all the shows, all the interviews, all the photos, and all the links to all the stories. So check it out at twistartupsaus.com. We will be back next week with a startup working to open up government coffers to every startup in Australia. If you like this show, please follow us on your favorite podcasting app so you can stay up to date with everything that's happening in Australia's startup ecosystem. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for This Week in Startups Australia, please drop us a note via the website at twistartupsaus.com. Until next week, this is Mark Pesci, thanking you for listening.